Hi, Trina. What? Are you still? I think you're still. Are you muted still?
No.
Okay, good. So, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining on the podcast, and looking forward to meeting you next month in West Texas. Hopefully, if you're there while I'm crossing through briefly on the road trip. So, tell us a little bit about your job.
My job right now, I'm just obviously soaking it up. Like Sean said, I'm new, very new to this industry. Right now, I just got my laptop today and just been watching and observing and just learning a lot. It's a lot to take in. So
tell us a little bit about your background, how you kind of became interested in this type of engineering or automation programming type of field, or oil and gas.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know what Sean's told you, but I haven't had a whole lot of exposure into it until my fiance came to my life, and I've watched him and just the stuff that he's done and throughout the jobs that he's had. It's been really neat and really interesting to watch. And it's really cool to see all the things that automation can do and just kind of how it's, it's like kind of expanding into the world,
Yeah. And so if you were to have a project or a problem that you're trying to solve for a customer, how would you go about tackling it?
Right now with being in the learning spot of it, I wouldn't be very good
from a high moment. From a high level, not like from a technical standpoint, but just from a problem solving communication standpoint, just what would you do first?
Well, I guess it depends on what the issue would be. Really, per se, to be honest, I don't know exactly what's. Are you talking about like with automation?
Yeah. Maybe so. Write down what the problem is, or like what they're trying to achieve, and.
Yeah, well, I've helped with. Not really so much help, but kind of helped with Dylan. He had like a control narrative CNA. We kind of go through right now and troubleshoot some of the issues that they've had, and I've observed him while he does that, and I've learned. I've been learning ladder logic and. Some HMI.
Yeah. I've heard that in automation, knowing what to code takes up more time than actually coding it. So it's like 70% of your time, I think, is actually understanding what to code, right? Asking the right questions, understanding the control philosophy, your inputs and your outputs, or, then actually pumping it out in ladder logic is just probably a minimal amount of time. Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, it has been interesting. I feel like I've been doing pretty well as far as catching on with the ladder logic part of it. HMI is what I've been kind of getting more into the last couple of days, probably about the last 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm. What HMI platforms are you working with?
Red Lion.
Okay, cool. Okay. So, so it's really, and like with platforms like Wonder Logics, even Ladder Logic, I mean, PLC programming is becoming more accessible, like more visually, or like, it's like, all right, well, I want this pump to turn on when this valve, closes or whatever. It's like more, abstracted from the actual code itself, the ones and zeros, whereas Ladder Logic, it's kind of more at that low level. Mm-hmm. So understanding ladder logic is good. Like, just like if you're a software developer, understanding like C code or machine code would have been good. But mm-hmm. now that we have better tools at our disposal, like Python or like Wonder Logics or like, Ignition or Aviva Insight, like these tools are just kind of doing, or MQTT with Spark Plug B, you're not even configuring tags anymore. You're just pointing a device to a MQTT broker, and then it's creating those tags for you. It's like a lot of these things are really shifting. So you're coming into the industry at a really interesting time to
try to catch up with it all.
No, not even catch up with it all. Honestly, you have an advantage. You really do. Because even myself, being very young, I've still been in the industry for long enough that it's like almost I'm even starting to like become stuck in my ways, if you will. Like almost like guilty of the same crime that I complain about the older generation, or, you know, the ones that, you know, the plant manager who's old or on its way out for retirement, doesn't want to upgrade the SCADA or whatever. Right. Like my friend was like, oh, you got to download TikTok. I'm like, I got to download TikTok. Like, you know, like really, like I just can't continue to dominate LinkedIn and YouTube. Like I have to download now TikTok and make videos for like, you know, teens, because now eventually those teens will become the next generation of automation programmers and video influencers. So I got to reach that audience. It's like, yeah, shit. I really do got to do that. You know, yeah. I can't be that same person that is not willing to adopt new technology. So, yeah, change, it's like, I'm only 26. It's like, shit, I'm already getting old.
Yeah. Change is always difficult. Like this has been obviously a huge change for me. So, you know, it's old to some and new to me, and
right. So that's why I'm saying you have an advantage in the sense that you're not like, you haven't learned how to do it the wrong way. Essentially, yeah. You can kind of come in with a fresh perspective. Also, you know, being a female, I think brings a fresh perspective to the team and just to automation in general. Something very welcomed. Something I'm really helping, trying to push, as well as a lot of the other companies doing more female programming campaigns and just in general. It's like really, it's kind of been a good old boys club, and it's really cool to see more women in the field. So thank you.
Nah, it's not a problem. It's been different being, you know, with a different industries, being predominantly like the only female I see around, especially in the oil field.
You got to connect with my mom. She was in this field. So yeah, that's something that I actually look up to her for being an engineer. And, you know, actually now she's a project manager for a system integrator, but she was doing Wonderware systems, you know, 20 years ago. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
What would you say if someone were to be starting out in it, you know, choosing a field to work in, based on what you know, what would you recommend to them as far as joining this type of industrial automation field or oil and gas and what you're doing?
Well, I haven't really got to expand my knowledge as far as what the options are and how to get into it, because not too many people want to really take a leap in to hire somebody who doesn't know a whole lot. And that's where the door opened for me, because, and that's one thing my fiance really tried for, was trying to get somebody to open the door to allow me to learn.
And does he also work at Cohen Consulting, or?
Yes, he does. He got hired, and then I got hired after him. Like you said, that was one of the things for us to move down here from Oklahoma, was to be able to take both of us, because, yeah, we both live there.
That's really cool. That's really cool. How do you like working with your spouse?
Oh, well, actually,
or your partner.
Yeah. Well, he's pretty much. Yeah, we're fiance.
Yeah, I'm not married with my fiance yet, but
we're pretty much.
So, so
no,
it's good?
Actually, I love it. Yeah, we get along really well. We have no problem. Honestly, it's funny because like the longer we are together, the better we are. It's like whenever you get more separated and time gets apart, then you like, sometimes.
That's good. Yeah, there's a couple of people like Cody Warren and his girlfriend at Tamaki Control. Her name is slipping my mind right now, but they got connected at work. Well, I know for you it's a little bit different. Your fiance brought you into that work, but I think working with your spouse is a really good thing because you get to spend more time together. I'm personally a little bit jealous, but then again, you know, grass is always greener. My fiance doesn't even like being on video or social media in general. I'm really thankful that she's actually going on the road trip with me. She took a 1 month off of her work, you know, being a flight attendant, to actually go on the road trip with me and our daughter. So that's really cool. But like, she's like, no, I don't want to be on the video. I'm like, I mean, come on, like it's the documentary, like you're part of it, right? The whole point is, it's like obviously industry 4.0, but the story beneath that story is my own personal journey, bringing my family on the trip, showing my daughter oil and gas field in West Texas, or as silly as it may seem, the Coca-Cola Coca-Cola world in Atlanta, seeing how they actually bottle Coke.
It's an adventure.
Yeah.
An adventure.
So, but then again, that has its benefits too, is that like we really balance each other out really well. If we were both like in LinkedIn 8 hours a day, I don't know like what would happen at that point. So I think there's pros and cons. So that's really cool. Give us an example of like what going out to an oil and gas site is like. Like, do you go on site visits?
Yeah. We just got back from site, and we go out of site most all days. Sometimes we get called out at night for different things, you know, for alarms going off and whatnot, and fixing things. Really, we just kind of set up and just sit there and program all day for however long it takes to get the problem fixed, and it's just really hot.
Right, and there's thousands of wells out there and hundreds of companies.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of people out there.
Thousands of people like, you know, I&E techs and automation engineers like you out in like essentially like almost like man camps, right? I mean, there's really not much in West Texas other than...
No, there's not. Coming out here, because I've never been out here, coming out here, I was like, dang, there really is nothing out here. It's just very...
Wait, don't they actually have the SpaceX is building their Starhopper in like...
Honestly, Midland? I have no idea. I haven't been able to see too much. Midland was, you know, a little more, I'm not going to say sustainable, but a little more like,
well, more of a city.
Yeah, it's more of like a city, sustainable to like a family life or maybe things to do. West Texas, as far as Pecos goes, there's really not much of a size.
You're in Pecos?
We're in Pecos, yeah.
I thought there's not Odessa.
No, we're in a little past to Pecos. We're
I gotta update my schedule. Hold on. I gotta. Well, maybe it's not too far out, but I mean, it's still essentially West Texas, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's actually a little further southwest than Midland, about an hour and a half or so.
Okay, I should probably update my schedule based on that information. I just was kind of just like, I mean. The entire road trip itself has been a planning. It's kind of not been a nightmare, but it's been a lot of work, you know?
Yeah, I bet.
Getting all the sponsors organized, getting the actual the route of the trip planned and planning the days and where we're going to stay and, you know, how I'm going to film it is also still a challenge that I have to tackle, but, really yeah, it's like some people are like, oh, it's like so unofficial. It's like, I'm like, well, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm really just kind of pulling this together out of my ass, really. I mean, I think it's still pretty planned. Like I'm going to be able to, on August 19th, for example, I'm having hard dates where like everything is pretty much going to be on calendar with the clients and as well as on calendar for public meetups. I don't know if I'm going to do I'm probably not going to do a public meetup in West Texas, but I'll probably do one in, New York, for example, or Milwaukee, Seattle, San Francisco. So kind of like the big cities, I'm going to do meetups and just connect with the people offline. You know, it's one thing just watching a video, but then it's another just to meet someone offline, you know?
Yeah. No, so. I don't know what Sean said about podcasts. I was like nervous because I've just never done one and I've never really been social media, you know. Individual. So
besides just thank you for doing that. It's really what I'm trying to get more people to do, and so by doing that maybe there's someone listening who's like, wow, you know, if she could do it, I could do it, you know, or so that's really cool. Looking forward to meeting you guys in West Texas and seeing what, you know, how oil and gas is leveraging IIoT. I think that's really going to be interesting. And Industry 4.0. I want to get some sick drone shots of the oil fields. I think that'll be really cool.
There's a ton out here. There's really nothing like it. I know I took a picture coming out here because all you could see is just nothing but derricks for miles and miles and, you know, just tons of tanks. It's just crazy.
Yeah. I've seen good drone shots, good B-roll, cinematic B-roll, just kind of taking like these two different worlds that have never really mixed and just kind of clashing them. Not saying that there's never been a cinematic oil and gas type of video or interview before, but like from people that actually like myself, who and people like you, Sean, all the people I'm interviewing, people that are actually in the industry on camera talking about it, sharing their knowledge, you know, sharing the actual process, sharing the take from the software companies like Rockwell, Aviva, Inductive, getting all those perspectives like in one continuous package, publishing that as a documentary. That's what I'm really excited about. And so I'm really thankful that, you know, not only you were able to jump on this podcast, which helps me further get the message out, but, you know, Cohen Consulting being a sponsor, all the other sponsors, It's really cool.
Yeah, it's not a problem. It's,
what do you got on your, is that a meth, like a methane sensor, or what would that be? Yeah, hydrogen sulfide?
This H2S? Yeah. Yeah, I just had to fetch my FRs from today.
Okay. Yeah, I remember. So I've worked on oil and gas, but I worked on a very different type of oil and gas. It was like your enterprise, like suit and tie, just miles removed from the process.
Yeah.
Kind of enterprise oil and gas. So like I'm seeing these tags, like, you know, tank battery 1 through 20 level, you know, mm-hmm. oil level, water level, right?
Yeah, that's all I've been seeing.
I think that was called interface level. One's mm-hmm. the interface level.
Mm-hmm.
Because for those of you guys that don't know, right, these oil and gas, a lot of the modern, like kind of, what is it, shale oil and gas?
Mm-hmm.
It's like done through fracking, like horizontal drilling, and then fracking requires a lot of water to frack. And then it also, when that oil and water is coming back out, you're having to separate it, right? So you have separators that separate that salt water, and then you have separators that separate the oil. And sometimes you get a little bit of oil and salt water. Sometimes you get a little salt water in the oil, and they kind of separate. Mm-hmm. So, unlike those tank battery screens, I was seeing, like, you know, you had the oil level and then the water level. You had the H2S high sensor. But for me, it was all just like tags on a screen. Like, I didn't really actually see the process, which kind of bothered me. You know, it's like, I know I didn't necessarily need to be there to integrate. I mean, it's not physically possible to like do 600 sites in like one day, you know, just driving to all of them. But I think I'm excited to actually be able to see. I mean, I've seen oil wells and stuff driving and stuff before, but like actually be there up close, showing my daughter it. Cause like, I think, you know, she might even ask a question that I may not even think of, like, oh, what does this do?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, that's an interesting question. Or she's
sound really like excited. Me when I first stepped up there.
No, I think beginners really do bring the best perspective. Mike Lapiton, who was on here before, was saying that he was doing a what is SCADA presentation to like a elementary classroom. And someone was saying, like, why do they call a water treatment plant or, you know, wastewater treatment plant, why do they call it a plant? And he was like, oh, you know, I didn't.
Don't really
know. It's a really good question. We just always called it a plant, but I think it's because like they used to call it a manufacturing facility.
Mm-hmm.
Then like a plant is kind of more of a production of a continuous process control, as opposed to like pumping out widgets. Like an oil and gas plant is producing, you know, I guess fuel, right? They're refining that oil into fuel, or a power plant. They're not really producing widgets. They're just producing power. But case in point, I think beginners always, or younger people, really do bring a fresh perspective that we can learn from just as much as we can learn from older generations.
Yeah. Whenever he first came out here, because like I said, he's been showing me, showing me / teaching me watching him for about the past 8 months, 9 months or so. And at first it was just complete hieroglyphics, didn't understand what he was talking about. And at first he was just like, well, this is this. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't understand anything
so
you're talking
about. So you're almost at your one year?
Of him showing me and teaching me just from like the very beginning. Like the very beginning, he was just like, you know, kind of breaking it down, like, what are XICs? What are XIOs? And like, I was like, oh man, I don't know. And so, yeah.
It's kind of weird when you think about it. I mean, it makes sense, but then it's like, yeah, there's this specific jargon and context of like, well, yeah, I mean, I think everyone understands on is on and off is off, right?
Yeah.
But it's like applying that into a picture of a relay diagram or of a data block, a bit and an integer, right? Like all this application of it, that's where it gets tricky.
Yeah, it gets a little muddy there for people who've never been exposed to it. So
it always kind of bothered me though that with like the power of smartphones and wireless high bandwidth, that still to this day, like some people will be like trying to save space on packaging all their booleans into an integer and like saving like scan, you know, like, you know, just manipulating the way that they're managing the data to save like milliseconds on the scan time. It's like, oh, it's so frustrating. It's like, why can't that be taken care of for us? Like the layout, like that's one thing I like about Rockwell PLC, particularly like Studio 5000 RS Logix 5000 code is that you don't have to know the actual data block address itself. It'll take care of that for you. And then you can just name it abstractly, whatever, you know, pump one running, pump one
dot
fault, rather than like B300, right?
It's like, yeah,
I like those levels of abstraction because it just makes it easier.
Yeah, that's pretty much the version I know. So
well, then you have a good foundation then, I would say. But yeah, I think, I mean, it only makes sense to me that the programmers of the future are not even going to have any, like, they're never going to have to configure a COM port. I mean, who the fuck wants to do that? You know what I'm saying? Like serial to communications. Oh, it just gives me a headache. And even though I have over the years gotten pretty decent at, you know, getting RS-232 and stuff to work, and you just got to know where to find the data sheets and the pinouts and TX and RX and, you know, making your own custom connectors. Like, it's just, it's like, my gosh, you know, things in our day, it's like smartphone and, oh, okay, hit okay to connect. All right, boom, it's done. It's like, you don't have to do any of that. It's just smart, right?
Yeah.
So the more we can get that technology out, and the more we can get technology that is smart, easy to integrate, intelligent, has context, and it's not abstract like B300, but it's like smart, I think that's going to make automation more efficient. I think it's going to make our lives easier as automation engineers.
Yeah, easier to learn.
Yeah, yeah, make it a more approachable, allow us to do more with less. What do you see the downsides of automation? Are there?
I haven't really seen too many downsides of it, no. Like I said, just for me, it's just me just honestly, personally, just trying to catch up and keep up.
So that anxiety technology is moving too fast.
Yeah.
It's and really hard to stay up.
Yeah. So trying to get there and get steady is pretty
it's like we're all competing against competing. Oh my gosh, my camera. Hold on a second. My camera's going to die. Just let that thought simmer for a second. Yeah. Yeah. It's like we do it to ourselves, you know, like we're competing to be more efficient. But we're really competing against ourselves. It's really, we're competing against our own individual self, I think, right? Competing against our own procrastination, competing against our own, you know, lack of knowledge or insecurities, fear of jumping out on video, fear of tackling an automation project that you've never done before. That's really what we're competing against. But everyone has this instinctual drive to do more or to learn more or to consume more or to have it better, faster, quicker, cheaper, safer.
That's the world we're in.
Funner, right? More entertaining. It's weird. Being in the middle of it is weird. I mean, it's in some sense, it's good because it's like, okay, we have a little bit more job security than, like, let's say a job that is going to become easily automated, right? Like, let's say transportation, you know, is going to be changed drastically over the next 5 to 10 years, right? Like Uber becoming automated, trucking, you know, becoming more automated. So automation is only going to get more, but whereas certain jobs like that, people that are in those careers are going to have to retrain. So from that perspective, it's like, okay, well, we can kind of feel a little bit safe. But then also, like I said, it's like, the technology is changing so fast that sometimes you can't even feel like you're, you know, keeping up. Or I think you really have to niche down, you know. I think that's where you can, you know, like be better at this one specific thing than anyone else. And you kind of set yourself apart and then still provide value without having to know all of everything, of all of every software product, you know. There's no way you can know all that, right? Because they're just moving too fast.
There's a lot. That's one thing I've noticed with everything, and just watching everybody with what they do in the field and everything, you know, in the company and the things that they talk about. And there's just so many things that, and avenues of things that they do. And, you know, obviously the older, you know, individuals, they have way more knowledge, and it's just like buckets of knowledge. And you're just like, dang, I don't know if I'm ever going to get there. It feels like I'm never going to get there.
Yeah.
But obviously they've done it for like years.
You'll get there. I think the technology will, I think in theory we'll always be able to keep up because we are our own limitation. So while technology will move faster and faster, like I said, I think more people will become more specialized, you know. Yeah. I mean, this goes back to farming. When we first had it, you know, when we transitioned from nomads to people that harvested their own food by growing it, like everyone was a farmer. You farmed for your own food. You worked all day for it. Right now, you know, then farming could be like, all right, well now other people have free time. So like, well now let's start sewing or let's start blacksmithing or, yeah. You know, now that just continues to further bifurcate like a fractal different niches. So for me, that niche is like industrial automation, like video content for industrial automation, getting these companies on board with video, getting them set up with video, the tools and the strategies, helping them tell their story, being an online personality to help bring different products, market, or events to market. That's my niche, right? So like, I don't know anyone else that's doing that. There's a few people that are doing similar things, like Chris Lukey, who was just on, he's doing video content pretty at scale with Rockwell Automation. Danny Gonzalez is with, he has a brand called Industrial Sage, where he does a lot of video content around industrial manufacturing. And he also has a videography company. So he's also doing something very similar, but I think we all, you know, our own unique experience, our own perspective is the most value that we can bring. And once we compete on that, then no one can beat you at being you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that.
So yeah, so Justin Dean, you know, he works at CSC Icon, and Rick Wagner is one of the, you know, he was the kind of the decision maker to go forward with the sponsorship, and I reached out to him to be on today's podcast, but I guess I don't think he made it onto the calendar, so that's the issue. Or yeah, here's Justin. Justin, what's going on, man? Justin, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, that's good. So I guess, you know, if there's anything else you wanted to say,
no, I don't really have anything else to say.
I hope you had fun.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, I think I just continue to you know, do what you're doing, and maybe just look at how you can use video or LinkedIn to kind of help amplify that, build your own personal brand, and help open up opportunities. I think you'll do just fine. Looking forward to meeting you.
Yes, you too. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Talk soon.